So
too
you
well.
Think that intelligent design is a thing?
Well, I certainly don't think that evolution disproves it. I guess it just depends what you mean by intelligent design. What do you mean by that?
Well, intelligent design is pretty specifically one thing, because it's a concept. It's an idea that's been around, but like specifically intelligent design is a concept that comes from the Institute for Creation Research. And they had a whole strategic plan for it. It was a pseudoscientific sort of propaganda thing that they developed to try to argue that life is too complex. It's not exactly irreducible complexity, but well, irreducible complexity is part of it, I should say. But it's just basically the idea that life could not have arisen on this planet through natural means. It must therefore require a designer.
So in that kind of formal explanation of the theory, it entails that natural processes could not have been responsible for like the origins of life?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha. So I would say that, like, I believe in evolution. I believe in natural selection. I'm pretty much a Darwinian as Darwinian as it gets. But I also don't think that has any weight in the conversation regarding, you know, theism or atheism. So I don't think that just because evolution is true, I don't think that supports an atheistic worldview, certainly. Certainly not.
Well, I wouldn't say that atheism even is a worldview. For one, I would say that evolution is a secular idea. If you said secular, I would say yes, evolution is a secular idea. All scientific ideas are secular. God is not. There is no scientific God hypothesis. It's pretty much antithetical to science.
You conceptualize those ideas that way. I don't think they're inherently secular. I think that's a misunderstanding of ideas to begin with.
So there are.
I don't think like evolution, at least to me, because I'm a theist. I wouldn't call myself I'm not an Orthodox Christian or a traditional religious person in any sense of the word. But I don't think for one second that, and a lot of atheists do this, like they will point to something like natural selection or evolution to kind of justify their atheistic worldview, because I think it is a worldview. I think that's safe to say. There's certain entailments that come along with the label atheism.
Do you subscribe to a unicornism?
A unicornism?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that is.
Do you think unicorns exist?
No, I don't.
Well, that's your worldview.
I would say that's a characteristic that can be fit into my worldview. I wouldn't characterize that as a worldview in and of itself.
Right, and I don't,
because it's very specific and low order. But atheism is not. Atheism is more of a, you can imply. And maybe incorrectly, but you can certainly imply certain beliefs that stem from an atheistic view of the world. Whereas if I said like unicornism, you couldn't really imply anything from that. The only thing you can imply would be that I think that unicorns exist, but you couldn't imply anything else. With atheist. And maybe it's a stereotype. Okay, maybe the worldview isn't correct, but I think we're kind of, you know, dabbling in semantics here.
Right. To me, atheism is just not having a theistic worldview. Atheism is not something in place of atheism. That I would say, like secularism is, for example.
Okay,
so
sure.
It's a little bit semantic, but I think it's kind of an important point, because there's no such thing as an atheist worldview. You can't do something like in the name of atheism. You can't do something in the name of nothingness. That just doesn't really make any sense to me.
I agree. I agree on us. For the sake of the debate, we'll call it secularism. But I disagree with the premise that you can't do anything in the name of atheism. Certainly, debating the non-existence of God would be an action that you do in the name of atheism. Otherwise that wouldn't. No other explanation makes sense. But I see what you're saying. So sure. We'll call it secular.
Sure, fine enough. So we're talking about like intelligent design, right?
Okay, yeah. So I just don't see. So I see a lot of atheists, especially on TikTok, kind of using their justification for their secular worldview, or using evolution and natural selection as a justification for their secular worldview. And I think that's chuckle-headed, to say the least. I don't think that you can imply an amount of impersonalness, if that's a word, from something like natural selection or evolution. I don't see how that bridge is drawn. I see how it could be drawn, and I understand and have sympathy towards that opinion, but to me it's a weird hill to die on, right? But by saying like, oh, evolution is true, therefore there must not be a God, that's kind of a it doesn't make sense why they choose that point specifically.
Well, for me, okay. If God does his works through miracles, do you agree or disagree?
Yes, I guess so. I agree.
Okay. I think that because they are miracles, they are indescribable through any kind of scientific inquiry. Or really any kind of inquiry would be wholly inadequate at describing how any of those things happen. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I hate to like hark up on the details here, but I could see like outside of the idea of God completely, I could look at something like, and I do look at something like natural selection and evolution as miraculous to begin with.
So miraculous, but not literal miracles. The laws of nature were not suspended in order for the first living thing to have.
Yes, right. Totally.
Okay, that's what I mean, right? Okay, so if we can describe something scientifically, to me, that sort of mummifies the idea that it was the work of God. Because if it was the work of God, I don't see how it could possibly be describable. Now, you could... there's like sort of a compromise in this, which this could be theism, but it sounds a little bit more like deism. Like you could believe that God created a universe and that he was all powerful and all knowing and knew, like he set it up in a way, like for example, he fine tuned the universe to produce life and produce intelligent life. Now the miracle was God creating that universe, but from that point on, God has sat back and not really done anything, except perhaps, you know, if you're a Christian, you believe he came down to earth in human form and whatever. But, you know, that's sort of, so like, you know, God didn't directly create life. It's sort of indirect, but it was all his plan.
Well, I would guess that idea depends on your definition of God to begin with. So I guess I'll ask you, what is the definition of the God that you do not believe in?
Any of them.
Okay. So I guess, okay. Not very helpful. I guess I'll use my definition of God. Just so we're kind of clear here. Cause I would say like, if I'm in the South, I'm like south of Atlanta. So if I went to a local church 10 minutes away and they pressed me, they probably would not consider me a Christian. But I consider myself a Christian, so I'll just give my definition of God. I think God is the identity of reality. So in the same way that like you can refer back to yourself, right? Like what is your, I'll just say your name is Planet. You could say, well, I am talking to this person on TikTok Live. Well, who is? Well, you are. Planet is. So that entails an identity, right? Because it's self-referential. You can refer back to yourself. I think in the same way that we can do that, I think reality is also capable of that. And that's kind of what I would use to maybe explain some of the phenomenon that's present in like natural selection. I think it's a self-referential system. And so does Darwin, by the way.
Wait, so what did you mean exactly by self-referential?
So it can look at, let's say there's an input, right? So if we kind of conceptualize it as an overall system, you can input something into that system, and then you'll have an output as a consequence of that. Something that would be self-referential would be able to look at the output and make adjustments on the input based on that data. And that's what natural selection does. Now, people would say, well, no, the environment is what's referred to, because natural selection kind of expresses itself through what would be most useful through like physical reality. So people could say that the environment is that differentiating factor, but I don't think that's the case, because it kind of begs the question, then why anything rather than nothing? Because it's much easier for a system to produce incoherency or to produce nothing. But if it's consistently over millions and millions of years of evolution, producing something that builds on top of itself and is consistent, then surely it has certain laws or rules that system follows or goes by.
Well, yeah, evolution is a non-random process. There's selective pressure, there's non-random mating, there's competition, there's parasitism and predation, niche partitioning. That all goes into competition, I guess. There's genetic drift. There are, you know, extinction events that occur. I mean, there's all kinds of controls on what drives natural selection. Or I guess you could say what drives evolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of so one argument that a lot of Christians use is they say basically, and they're not using these terms, but basically what they're saying is, look at the result of natural selection. Look at the result of evolution. It's created these forms of life that are so complicated that we're still figuring out how to understand them. So that, in and of itself, must be evidence for God, right? Which is a weak argument, of course, because you could just fall back and say, well, no, natural selection was responsible for that. But I guess the question that I ask is, what produced the system that produced the laws of nature or natural selection in general? Like, natural selection, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know where the universe came from. I don't know. Nor is that a Nor is that even like a relevant aspect of evolution. I mean, not really. Whether or not God created the universe,
well, it's certainly relevant.
Isn't
to
really
me,
relevant to whether or not evolution is true.
No. It's not relevant to whether evolution is true, but it's certainly relevant to the question of, is there a God?
Because yeah, but that's yeah, but we're not arguing whether or not there's a God.
Is that not what we're arguing here?
We were arguing whether or not, what's the best explanation for life? God created it spontaneously through miracles and magic, or that life arose naturally on this planet. Again, it could be the case that some sort of God, or a whole bunch of them, or just three of them, created a universe and created a universe that has these immutable natural laws that eventually gave rise to solar systems and stars and galaxies and life in this universe. In that case, evolution would still be exactly what modern science tells us it is. And it's, in a way, a product of, like, an example I usually use is, let's say God was standing on top of a hill, and God magically made a boulder appear in his hand, and then he rolled the boulder down the hill. The boulder rolling down the hill is no miracle at all. That happens because of gravity, and because it's round, and because of potential energy. That's why that happens. Creating the boulder was a miracle, but the rest of it, no. So,
right? No, I completely agree with that, and I would also make the claim that there are parts of reality that are painfully deterministic. Like I'm not, you know, I don't have any quarrels with that idea at all. The point I'm trying to make is just because there's a natural explanation for life or any other kind of biological phenomenon that we can observe through science, that doesn't mean that natural selection is the top of the line to that.
I agree that it doesn't disprove God. I agree. I would argue that, you know, if evolution is true, then, like, in a way, I think Christianity is probably false, because you'd have to come up with a really tortured argument to try to work around this, because if humans evolved, then there was no Adam and Eve, and there was no original sin, and there's no reason for Jesus to have ever existed. Now, you could come up with something like, well, yeah, humans evolved, and God just picked two of them to be Adam and Eve, which means the Genesis story isn't literally true, like, at all.
Oh, of course it's not.
At least the parts about the creating aspects of it. Maybe there was a garden between those four rivers, really is a cherub with a flaming sword still sitting there to this day being like, get out of my garden! But, you know.
I don't entertain the idea of any literal interpretation of Genesis actually taking place. Like, as someone who does identify as a Christian, I don't accept that whatsoever. I think a lot of Christians do, maybe even the majority of Christians do. I think that's a mistake, obviously. But I don't think that I don't remember the term you used. I don't think you'd have to break your neck in order to explain that non-literally.
I called it a tortured argument.
A tortured argument. So I don't think it would necessarily have to be a tortured argument, more so than a metaphorical interpretation. Like, it clearly, like, when I read Genesis, even having grown up in church, I'm not for one second interpreting that as literal. And that's not because of, you know, anything I've heard or experienced. That's just because of the reality of the situation. So if people do interpret that literally, I would say to them, you know, that's their problem if they want to, you know, debate a scientific materialist. But
so what I should add is, it would be, I think what you're saying is totally fair and right. It would be a tortured argument if you simultaneously were trying to adhere to, for example, biblical inerrancy or univocality, or, you know, any of that other stuff. What you're describing, sure, somebody can find a way to make that compatible, I guess, and it's not the Herculean task that having all those, that additional baggage would be. So
I guess the reason that I kind of came with that that position to begin with, and kind of fronted that position to begin with, is because and, you know, I'm not calling you out or anything, but I was on one of your live streams one time, not as a guest, but just in the comment section, and I said something along the lines of, evolution does not disprove intelligent design, and you said yes, it does. But then a few minutes ago, I kind of made my case, and then you said, well, no, it doesn't, and you agreed with me.
No, I only said that it doesn't disprove God. Look, it could... It depends on what you mean. If you mean that evolution doesn't disprove that God created a finely tuned universe where life arose naturally as a consequence of the universe he made, not because God specially created life. If that's what you mean by intelligent design, then okay. But that's not what anybody I've ever talked to means by intelligent design. They mean that, yes, God must have specially created life. It was a separate creation event. I think that evolution turns that into a God of the gaps argument. It relegates it to total, like, unnecessity. I don't know if that's even a word, but
so you kind of cut out a little bit when you first made that point. Could you repeat that one more time?
When I first started talking? What I said was evolution, so it might depend what you mean by intelligent design. If you mean that God intelligently designed the universe and fine-tuned it for life, and then life arose naturally as a consequence of the way God set up the universe. If that's what you mean by intelligent design, then evolution doesn't debunk that. But that's just because evolution, like, whether or not God, if God doesn't exist, or God does exist and that's what God did, then those two things would be indistinguishable from each other, from the respect of where did life come from. But that's not what anybody ever means by intelligent design when I talk to them. They mean that God specially and separately created life.
I guess I just don't see how those two things are mutually exclusive. Like, so God could set up the conditions for life, but are you saying that doesn't mean that he directly created life?
Yeah, because it's like the boulder example.
Well, I would say that if you're, okay, so let's say that you're, self-admittedly, I don't think this is a good argument. This is kind of just what comes to mind. But if I'm a computer programmer and I program a computer to serve a specific like set of functions, right? I certainly would, if I'm a good computer programmer, I would be able to kind of predict what would happen as a consequence of the functions that I set up, right? And I would think it would be, you know, I'm not God, but I would think it would be similar in that case scenario where, let's say that in the first kind of set of examples that you proposed, that God created the conditions for life to be sustainable in the first place. Well, surely with that in mind, life would be an inevitable consequence of that setup. So I don't understand the distinction there.
The distinction is, did God create life? Now, if God created the universe and the universe creates life as a consequence of its design, I don't think that's a really good argument for, well, that's what I mean by God created life. Because again, the people I'm typically dealing with are people that do take like the Genesis account literal. That the creation of life were separate creation events from God creating the heavens and the earth and the moon and the stars and the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon and the sun and this thing called love.
Right. I mean, I guess I don't understand the distinction. So I understand and I sympathize with the frustration that's posed to you by most Christians that would take something like Genesis literally, because I get frustrated with that too. Like, I probably argue more with Christians and theists than I do anybody else because of that point. Because that's, you know, that's kind of an indefensible worldview when it comes down to it. You cannot claim to have an objective, defined explanation for reality and then simultaneously claim that evolution and natural selection isn't real. So I sympathize with that point. But I guess kind of my point going into this live, I don't see the necessity of atheism under that set of presumptions. That's shared with a lot of atheists. And in the same way that a lot of Christians interpret Genesis literally, a lot of atheists will look at natural selection and evolution and say completely that disproves intelligent design or disproves any idea of God. And that's also a straw man in the same way that you know, Christian straw man Genesis. So that, I guess that's the point I'm making.
Right, and I would just say that if evolution is true, there's no necessity for a God to be behind any of it.
Okay, well, I think we've found the point where we disagree, because that's why I'm a theist.
Right, but we wouldn't be arguing about evolution. We would be arguing about where did the universe come from, which is there'd be absolutely no point in talking about dinosaurs or genetics or anything, if that's what we're talking about.
Well, no, I think there certainly is a point to make on the evolutionary natural selection argument to the existence of God. Because the question that I ask is, what is the agency behind the decision making of natural selection. And you could, and I think most Darwinians would say the deciding factor is the environment, right? The kind of natural selection shapes itself around the environment that it works in. But that begs the question, what is the underlying process behind the construction of the environment to begin with? So I'm saying that natural selection clearly has a preference. It's one thing and not another. You've never met somebody with four eyeballs. So why does natural selection shape itself around a certain set of parameters and it's not just random? Like, why does it have the tendency and the drive to survive? Wouldn't it be easier to not survive at all and for nothing to exist?
Be easier. I don't know what easier means. I suppose the universe would. So the less stuff happens, the slower entropy increases, and so the universe would last longer. So for any of you that are watching this, if you think, man, I should probably like be working out or something, by sitting on your butt watching this and doing less, you actually make the universe last a tiny bit longer. So thank you for doing that. But why does any of that happen? I mean, there's different ways you could look at it. One, it's non-random. I mean, the reason the environment is shaped the way it is because is because it's shaped by, formed and influenced by, you know, the sun and therefore the climate and Earth and its geography and all these physical things that are just following natural law, right? Now,
yes, but
you can argue
be in place to shape that environment to begin with. So natural law exists before environment exists. Otherwise, what shaped the environment?
The natural law shapes the environment.
Yes, but you just said that natural law moves around the environment. So is natural law move around itself?
No, natural law is just it's the thing that it's not really a thing, but it's what causes like the reason we have a solar system is because gravity coalesces objects together and then we get a sun and then we have a planet and water and all this other stuff.
Right. But certainly there would have to be certain certain insistences made by natural law to shape any form of environment to begin with. So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, like I understand natural law as a phenomenon and how it kind of shapes around its environment and propagates that which is conducive to its environment. But what determines the state of the environment to begin with, if not natural law? And if it is natural law, then how does it do that? Why does it narrow down its preferences in that manner?
Because things happen. I'm not 100% sure what you're asking, but I think the answer is because things happen for a reason. So if you wanted to analyze this on the level of why does natural selection do what it do, this was revolutionized in 1976 by Richard Dawkins, who wrote The Selfish Gene. He got everybody to think about it in a different way. It's the genes attempting to propagate themselves. And so this leads to really weird ways of thinking of things, like a chicken is just an egg's way of making another egg, for example. From a gene-centered perspective, there's nothing wrong with that. It's weird, but that makes sense in that case. Now, what are genes? Well, they're just kinds of molecules, and they find ways to. This makes it sound like I'm saying there's agency here, but there's just no other way of talking about things except this way. They find ways in order. Well, let's think about just like a virus. A virus has literally no intelligence, no intentionality. It's not conscious, unless you're a panpsychist, then you might think it is. But
it's not conscious, it has
found a way. Well, no, a virus does. a virus does things for a reason, but it doesn't have reasons for doing things. Well, the philosopher Daniel Dennett makes arguments like that. So viruses are extremely successful, but they're completely dumb things. They are literally just conglomerate. I was going to say particles. They're bigger than that. They're just conglomerations of particles with no will or intelligence or intentionality. But they do what they do, and they're successful because of matter interactions.
Yes. Yeah, so I would agree that a virus isn't intelligent or conscious in the same way that you and I are, certainly. Yeah.
And our cells, like for living organisms like ourselves, we want, if you want to think about it in a way that's analogous, just think of sperm and egg. They're not more intelligent. They don't have more intentionality than viruses or anything like that. Neither does the DNA inside them. They're just way more complicated, and they do the same kinds of things.
I would agree with you that it doesn't have any intelligence or agency in the way that it's like typically and properly defined. But it's, I think, because of the fact that it's effective, I think that implies, at least implies preference. Because if something's
yeah, it can have preference, but that's just because natural, like you have a, if you have a non-random system, that system will, like, it may run through courses of like almost like trial and error, where lots of different random combinations or whatever are tried, but only ones that work are selected for, and then from all the trials and all of the more successful methods for whatever we're talking about, propagation or reproduction or whatever, after that process has run the gauntlet so much, we now get to this point where it's like, holy crap, this system works so incredibly well. It's like, well, yeah, well, there's been gazillions of eons for the process to have worked out to this point.
Yes. Yeah, so you could say if natural selection was a person, and natural selection, you know, did have, I'm not saying it does, but if natural selection was a person, it would be an empiricist, right? It would choose that which works and then exclude that which doesn't work, right?
Yeah, that's just, I would say that's what happens, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what defines, why does one thing work and what does one thing work better than something else? Would you just say that's just the way it is?
Well, why does one thing work and something else doesn't work?
I know I'm kind of, you know, harking on details and asking impossible questions, but I think it's relevant.
Right. So why does it do that? Well, so like we've done experiments where we can take just molecules that are autocatalytic, which means they can, how do I say this? They act as their own enzymes, and then they can take in raw material and form more of themselves. And so it's autocatalytic. So like our DNA replicates. These experiments are designed to sort of replicate some sort of process that can lead to the first self-replicating molecules. Because in order to have life, you have to have do what a virus does, only a little bit more complex, right? And these experiments are even more simple than what a virus does. Now, what they can do is, you know, they do that. Some of the experiments, not all of them have the same sort of, I don't want to say, that sounds stupid. They don't always get the same results. Sometimes there's more, I'm trying not to sound like a moron. Well, I have no choice because this stuff isn't exactly my wheelhouse. But sometimes they don't, the yield isn't very high. There we go. Sometimes in the experiments, the yield is low. Other times it's kind of medium. Sometimes it's kind of high. Sometimes what they do is they actually take multiple different molecules that can do this, and they put them in the same place and allow them to compete against each other. And some win and some lose. Now, I think, I know I'm being long-winded, but I think this is in the spirit of what you're asking. Why some of those outcomes? Well, the conditions were just simply favorable. I mean, there's not really much more to say about it. At least there's nothing more I can think of to say about it. There are just, you have these interactions, these chemical systems, and sometimes you get these results, sometimes you get other results. It's, I don't know, there's not much. Have you ever seen, like on TikTok, there are like these little games where it's rock, paper, scissors, and they bump into each other. And so if paper bumps into scissors, the scissors turns, or the paper turns into scissors.
Yes.
Okay, so inevitably out of that, one of them wins, right? Now, it's probably knowable, like calculatable, which one will win based on the initial conditions. But from where we're sitting, it's totally unknowable. And so when you get to the end and you're like, well, this time scissors won, why? We can't really say, we don't have an answer, right? But that doesn't mean that there's something supernatural going on or anything like that.
Right. And okay, so I would say two things. I kind of have a problem with the word supernatural, specifically in the way that Christians use them, and I'll kind of use that to further elaborate on my point here. I think that, and I agree with everything that you just said, in a situation like that where, yes, natural selection does mold itself around the conditions of the environment. Okay, so my question would be, what determines or what makes certain conditions preferable or defined, and what makes certain conditions like non-existent? And I guess the atheistic response, and I'm not knocking it, would be we don't know. Like we don't know the rhyme or the reason behind this like form of determinism or evolution. And I think the theistic answer to that would be something like intelligent design. So I think what bothers me, and I didn't come on here thinking that I would, you know, convince you that God exists, but I think one thing that bothers me is when people kind of strawman the argument to say, well, you believe in all this stuff because you are hopeless in your life and you need something to believe in, or you believe in this because you were raised that way, and you are generally just a stupid person. That's a very kind of weak argument and form of atheism, and I see people in the comment section doing it right now. When really, it's the theist and the atheist really aren't at odds as much as one might think. You can pose the atheistic perspective as just as indefensible as you could strawman the theistic perspective. So again, I didn't come on here to prove anything to you. I guess I'm trying to demonstrate the point that theists aren't as dumb as you think, guys. And just because someone is a theist does not mean that they haven't thought through their worldview or questioned themselves to the point that an atheist who may have, you know, ran from religion might have done as well. I think it's the same process. We, as people, we want to know the truth about things, and we have certain processes that derive us to points of truth. So to look at someone's, you know, well thought out methodology in which they use to derive a certain conclusion, and then to critique that and strawman it by saying, well, you just believe in Sky Daddy. That's a stupid argument that doesn't do atheists any favors at all.
Sure. Okay. I've got several people that are waiting, so we'll have to table it for now, but I just want to say a couple of things. Given everything you've said, I don't really think that the throwing God in there is a good resolution, because why is there intelligent life in the universe? Well, because God finally tuned it that way. Well, then to me, there are two things going on there. You're assuming the mind of God, what God's intentions were or why God would want to do it. But then we would just get to, why did God do that? And so it's just, I think we're at the exact same, I think we hit the exact same point where we go, well, I don't know why. But we've just assumed something else, something that we don't really have any good evidence for. I think we have pretty good evidence that a universe exists. Yes. But for a God, I think that's just kind of, it's it's just an unnecessary assumption that leads us to the same place where we go,